Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations stance point. With your host, Dan Rennie.
Yeah, welcome to Let's Talk. Before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land where we broadcast from here in the West End of Brisbane, and also pay respects to Elders past and present. Thank you for your company. It's great to have you with us today. As we continue our series on Indigenous Business Month, I'm very pleased today to be speaking with Tristan Schultz from Relative Creative. Hey, brother, welcome to Let's Talk.
Hey, how you going?
Yeah, good. As we always do, please, bro, can we start with your mob and your country?
Yeah, man. I'm a Gunnawarra man. I've grown up here on the Gold Coast. I'm part of the broader Bundjalung Nation, part of the Yugambeh speaking peoples.
And, of course, as I mentioned at the top there, Relative Creative is your business, and we are yarning all about Indigenous businesses here on Let's Talk right throughout the month of Indigenous Business Month. Tell us about Relative Creative.
Yeah, Relative Creative is a design practice. I'm the founder and director of it, and we do a bunch of different things. But, myself as director and my wife as co-director, Beck, we cross a few disciplines in the practice, from visual communication and graphic design to design strategy and design thinking and those sorts of things. But it's always based around, the combination between sustainability, thinking about futures, and thinking about First Nations context and Indigenous knowledge. And, so all those things combined. So we generally work with some of the levels of any of the levels of government and various large, small, and medium organisations, and always in contexts of social responsibility and those sorts of things. So I guess our practice works with about 50% or 60% or 70% odd First Nations contexts, and then 40% or 50% in many other contexts as well, whether it's got to do with the health sector or education or strategy and sustainability and futures thinking.
No, that's deadly, Bruz. What about some of the products or, I suppose, services that that you might provide?
Yeah, so like I said, across many disciplines. So sometimes it could be called service design or strategic design. So we'll sit down and help people strategize their strategic plans or strategic visions or First Nations action plans or sometimes reconciliation action plans, if that's the right fit. Sometimes it's got more to do with actual places. So we might work with environments, eco centres or museums or small towns and things like that to help them think about interpreting in that museum or at that place, experiencing that museum or at that place, or just general placemaking, or just generally finding their way around it, so wayfinding design as well. And then sometimes it's got to do with visual communication of materials, like publication design and even book illustration, or just laying out publications in various ways as well. So yeah, there's a few different ways that we can get involved.
Well, here at AAA, I can vouch firsthand for the work that you do. We've engaged you for multiple things, including strategy planning and web design. And I can tell you, you mob certainly know what you're doing over there.
Oh, thanks, brother.
No worries. And of course, where you're based as well, Burley on the Gold Coast. Been lucky enough to visit you in your office / home there. What an incredible spot you got there, bros. It must be conducive to being creative in an environment like that.
Yeah, bros, it is. It's a special place. Burley Heads, Jullagal, is the name of the actual headland over there. And my family have been here for a few generations, both my original side of my family's and non-First Nations side as well. across a few generations have kind of been involved in Burleigh Heads and the Gold Coast. My dad went to Burleigh Heads State School, and my little daughter goes there now. And I showed her, we found him in the yearbook, you know, 1965 or something, in the yearbook on her very first day in the office when she was all nervous. And so that was nice for her. I surf every day when I can, and just get involved in the outdoor environment as much as I can. So, you know, it's home for me, and it's always been, just trying to make sure that I can stay in this environment and not get pulled away to Sydney or Melbourne or anywhere around the world, really, across my career. I feel like I've found a real sweet spot now. We've built the studio, the practice, in the backyard of a little old brick home here, and I've just spent the last couple of years planting heaps of native vegetation, banksias and grevilleas and gums and stuff all around the yard. And yeah, as you I think you saw, you know, a few weeks ago, it's really starting to blossom now. So it's a nice place to be.
Very, very envious. I don't know how much work I'd get done with all those distractions, but you've built a beautiful little piece there of paradise. And of course, it is all about that work-life balance. You know, you like to get away and have a surf and clear your mind. And I think that's really, really important. Do you place as much emphasis on your home and work-life balance?
Yeah, I do, brother. But you know what? It hasn't always been that way. I'm sure many people can relate to. You go through life, and it takes a while, I guess, to find that sweet spot to calibrate with, you know, what's important in life. Funny thing is, I'm sitting here right now recovering from an Achilles tendon snap that happened 10 weeks ago from being outdoors in the bush rock climbing. And over that 10 weeks, it's been a pretty good time to think about how life is short. Mm. And I've got to make sure that I just keep doing more work to balance work and life and leisure and my daughter and my wife and you know, this environment that I'm in. So I think I'm on the way, but now more than ever, I treasure that. And I don't think I did as much when I was younger. I've gone through so much academic life, for example, a bachelor's and a master's and then a PhD, and all of that just takes so much work, you know, through my mid-20s to mid-30s, really, at least 10 or 15 years of all of that, in amongst, obviously, working and making sure money's being made at the same time. I probably did lose track a lot with, what's important, what should I treasure and cherish and value, and I think in the last few years I've really recalibrated and made sure that I'm going for runs as much as I can, and I'm getting interested and fascinated with gardening and in the last few years in particular, and just, you know, that just brings so much joy to my life, and surfing's always been there, but it comes and goes, falls away. And when I say that, I mean, you know, maybe I'll surf only once a week instead of five times a week, but for me growing up, 5, 6, 7 times a week or more, at least once a day, was completely normal and strange if you didn't do that. And so, starting to surf only once or twice a week or not even once a week starts to feel really, really strange and wrong, and the wrong balance. So it's just, it's been a few years to just recalibrate all that. And like a really tendon injury and the recovery on rehabilitation I'm doing now has made me realize how short life is, how short my health, my physical health, you know, is, and my ability to run around or go and do a big trail run or surf with the ability that I want to surf. Maybe I'm not going to have much time left with that, a couple of decades, you know, until I'm a bit too old to do some of those things to the capacity I want to. So yeah, just been making sure I get it in.
You're listening to Let's Talk here on 888 Murray Country. We're yarning with Tristan Schultz from Relative Creative as we continue our series on Indigenous Business Month. What about your own personal journey, bros? How did you get into business?
Yeah, brother, it's probably through being disillusioned with whatever other businesses and stuff I was working for. You know, my journey was one of, sort of running away when I was young, for a start, when I was real young, and running away and living out of home at 15, and then spending years working in nightclubs and bars just to make money to pay rent and feed myself, until I refound my love for art and being an artist as a kid and stuff, and remembered that somehow maybe there's a job I can have in that. And so went and found a TAFE course and didn't last too long in that. Ended up back, just working night shifts in nightclubs. But at some point I was lent a hand by Griffith University and the Gomari Centre there, who allowed me to apply in my young 20s, because obviously I didn't finish school. I finished year 10 and then just was working. And so I had to apply for university, and the Gomari Centre helped me with that application, and I got into a Bachelor of Arts and then transferred across to a Bachelor of Design, and off I went from there. And it wasn't until the last few weeks of that degree, maybe 2005 or something we're talking about now, I started to work for an old surf brand that doesn't exist anymore. And living on the Gold Coast as a surfer, that's your dream, you know. When you're a young fella, you want to design. If you're creative, you want to be a designer for a surf company. Mm. And that sort of dream came true for me. And I was working for that company for a few years before I had my first, crisis, disillusionment, like, what am I doing here? Why am I just designing this backpack to look the same as the next one so that the kid can go and ask his mum to get it for him? And so I took off backpacking around the world for a while. And internet was just good enough at that point to be able to send designs back around the world to other surf companies, sort of as a freelance designer. Mm. So I did that until Billabong hit me up and said, we want you to take this real big job with us. And I took that for a couple of years. And then the financial crisis hit, and I had to leave that and sort of go back into master's. It was really at that point when I was searching for a master's degree that could talk to me about the things that I knew about, the state of the world just didn't seem right. The way I was applying my design skills to big problems just wasn't there. And I needed a way, an access in to feel like I was aligning my morals and values with what I was getting paid to do. And I found a master's program that helped me to do that. And then I got, embroiled in academic life for a few years. Until halfway through, I thought, okay, I've got to try this out for myself with my own business, because I was tutoring and lecturing students at university about, how design can be different, how design practices can be different. And I guess what concerns designers should have about the state of the world and just how central they are to perhaps being able to help people define problems or be a part of problem solving. And I just didn't have anyone to lead by example, really. In a global context, there's a little bit around, but certainly not in an Australian context, and not in a First Nations context did I have these examples to show to the students. I always had to speak about it like as if it's something we all needed to create together. So I sort of just thought, all right, I've got to give this a red hot crack, and started Relative Creative more formally, and just made a commitment to only take work, and this was about 10 years ago now, to only take work through Relative Creative that had to do with that social responsibility and sustainability and thinking about the nature of the futures, various futures that may unfold over the coming decades. That's what I ended up working on in my PhD as well, and PhD was just kind of a bunch of case studies of me experimenting with how to do a design practice that was concentrating on this stuff, and reflecting on that in the PhD. And, it's just been successful in as far as that's the only work that we do now. We don't need to bring in all kinds of other work, but you know, we're not trying for growth at Relative Creative, so that's not a metric of success for us. The practice isn't getting bigger. In fact, it's getting smaller. We sort of got to about 5 or 6 staff, and now we're back down to 2, just myself and my wife, and I'm at ease with that. That's fine, because it does help me to just maintain that concentrated focus on the ethical position that we have as a practice and the kind of work that we want to concentrate on.
And of course, we know there's many, many challenges that come with running your own business, I suppose particularly for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. What are some of those key challenges, I suppose, or barriers for sustaining business for mob?
Yeah, look, by far for me personally was just my ability to run all of the other practical components of the business in the early days, you know, invoices and business management and those sorts of things, tax and all of that sort of stuff. I just find it diabolical, and it's just not my skill set. And even if I can do it, it's just not what I wanted to prioritize my time on.
Yep.
You know, and I just saw myself as a creative person who was able to sort of, focus my time on that. And so I was lucky enough that when my wife, who's got a real similar professional and academic background to me, as a designer and strategist and things like that, when she came on, you know, it just so happened that she finds that those skill sets are better for her, and the strategic sort of creative side, and illustration and visual communication side of things is where I can more concentrate on. So that's been, that was a barrier, and that barrier is fixed now, just through coincidence of having a wife that's interested in getting involved in the business. you know, in the early days I had a partner who was the opposite, did not want to get involved in the business at all, even though I could see how we could be a great team, how it could be successful, because, you know, I knew she'd be able to do those sorts of things, but she didn't want to. And the business did fall over. It wasn't her fault, but it was because I wasn't able to keep up with that side of the business. I guess for us as a business, also, you know, we don't market ourselves as only a First Nations practice working on First Nations topics. We don't market ourselves at all, actually, but the kinds of people that approach us is almost always in relation to a First Nations context, and that's good and right, but you know, you do feel like sometimes that I guess I get undervalued for all of the other strategic work and insights and expertise that I have in other areas, and people kind of seek you out just for that. And I see that happening so much with First Nations businesses, you know, the labour that's put on us to just focus and concentrate on that, and don't worry, you know, there's other consortium partners or stakeholders that can take care of the things. And well, you know, often it's like, well, no, actually, I feel like I'm an expert in that component of it too, irrespective of my identity.
And this year's theme for Indigenous Business Month, Actions Today, Impact Tomorrow. I know from working with you, you're always forward thinking, forward planning, but what does that statement or that theme mean for you, Actions Today, Impact Tomorrow?
Yeah, Actions Today, Impact Tomorrow, eh? Mm. Yeah, look, that's a good statement, because what we do now will transform experiences and transform the way people think about things, which will then transform what people do. And then it means that the next generation of people, based on what action we do now, will have hopefully less of a fight to have to deal with, because they're starting from a new place. They're starting from people being transformed in their perceptions of whatever it might be. You know, we can see that's what's happened with the struggle, whether that be through the struggle for Indigenous rights, the struggle to vote, the list goes on. You know, the impact that we can have now is only as a result of the action that's happened from our ancestors and from past generations. And I think the more that we can just keep that in mind, that we are now those people that our future generations will look back on and think about, well, what actions did you take to set me up to be able to, make impact easier for me?
Mm. Brother, business savvy, I suppose, runs in the family as well. Your brother, Clinton, who our listeners will be familiar with, very successful in his own endeavours as well.
Yeah, is he? No, he's good. He started up Sobar, non-alcoholic beverage beer company, and that's gone really well. It's really spearheaded a conversation around non-alcoholic beer in the last sort of 5 or 6 years. Mm. And as we've seen, that market, I think it is the fastest growing beverage market in Australia in general. And he was able to get on board early. So that's good from a business perspective for him. But what it also meant is one of the first players in that space, the fastest growing beverage space in Australia, was actually a First Nations person, not only a First Nations person that happens to be doing non-alcoholic beer, but it's a beer that is all based around social and emotional well-being. As a message as well. And that's not just in sort of the identity of Sobar as a brand, but in the entire messaging of, I guess, who Clinton is. He's an Aboriginal psychologist, and his work is really important in other spaces that don't have to do with Sobar. But Sobar acts as that sort of front-facing vessel for a lot of that important work.
Yeah, I just love it. We yarned with Clinton a couple of weeks ago here on Let's Talk, and just reflecting on that non-alcoholic beverage market 5 years ago. Sobar was the main player, and now they're all seeming to jump on board and follow the lead of our First Nations brother there, which is deadly.
Yeah, for sure.
And using native ingredients as well. I mean, that's super important and educational, and continuing our traditions as well.
Yeah, he's got the message on point, and he's trying hard to build a brewery at the moment as well to bring it all in-house. That'll be good to watch over the next couple of years.
Lastly, brother, what advice have you got for any mob out there thinking about starting a business or getting into business?
I know it's tough, hey? Me and my brother know it's tough. We obviously had the same upbringing and the same struggles, and they're struggles that are really familiar to so many listeners, I'm sure. I don't beat myself up too much about, say, how long it took for me to get to this point, because it takes a long time to align what you do with values because of all kinds of different struggles that you have growing up that are roadblocks. Because in the meantime, you've got to get paid to do something, to put a roof over your head and food in your mouth. And so I guess the best advice that I've got is, always strive towards aligning your values with what you do get paid to do. But along the way, don't beat yourself up. Just be okay with the fact that what you do get paid to do may conflict some of your values when you're younger, because you are struggling through various things and trying to just make sure you've got money to keep moving forward. Yeah.
Brother, thank you so much for joining us today on Let's Talk. We appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man.
Thanks, brother. Really appreciate it. Great to talk.
Tristan Schultz from Relative Creative, and that is our show for today. Thank you very much for your company, and you can catch up at our website, AAA.org.au.